Welcome to the Onyx Pathcast. I'm this week's host, Dixie Cochran. With me are Eddie Webb.
Hello.
And Matthew Dawkins.
Hello.
This week we're going to be interviewing Ian A.A. Watson, who's the creative lead on Trinity Continuum. And he has also done work on our website, our social media, a few other things. He does a bunch of the unofficial stuff for Vampire Bloodlines, the video game, which is pretty cool. Is there anything that you're looking forward to hearing in this interview, Matthew?
Well, yes, again, it's going to be another interview that I'm hearing and not participating in. It's another party I haven't been invited to on the podcast, of which I'm supposed to be a full third wheel. And that I have never felt more like a third wheel than when it comes to these interviews. So we will make sure on the next one I'm more present. But yes, there's a lot I'm looking forward to on this, because I've met Ian, I guess, a couple of times. He's always been a very interesting fellow. And I think the thing I'm looking forward to most is hearing him wax on about the games that he loves. I don't think there's any denying that he has got a whole hell of a lot of love for the Trinity universe. And as you say, the Vampire the Masquerade Bloodlines video game and so on. So I'm hoping the enthusiasm will drip off the podcast.
Yeah, Ian's very passionate about all of his interests. When I was first working on Exalted, he definitely volunteered to just talk at me about Exalted lore for a while at some point, because he's really into that too. Maybe we'll get that. I don't know. But you've probably seen Ian at conventions. If you've ever come by our booth at a convention, he is usually working one of the tables, often with an art book from the 90s of early Trinity art that he likes to show people. Yeah, so let's get on with that.
Okay, have fun.
Thanks! I'm Dixie Cochran, your host. With me are Eddie Webb.
Hello.
And Ian A.A. Watson.
Hello.
He's the creative lead on Trinity. So we're going to be talking about that quite a lot today. Ian, did you want to start off with a little bit of your history with Onyx Path and with Trinity in particular?
Sure. I'll start with Trinity, because that goes back further. starting around 2003, so just about 2 years after Adventure had ended, I started working on, I wanted to sort of continue the line, do some of the books that had been canceled before, or that had been planned before the line was canceled. And I started putting together, a pretty decent team, including people like Stu Wilson, who later went on to become the Werewolf developer. So this is before he was doing any real freelancing. Unfortunately, the project didn't really finish. We got about halfway through, but most of the people I had on the project had, quote unquote, real lives and paying work. So they couldn't dedicate the time to my crappy little project.
Right.
but some of the work I did there helped inform sort of the direction I wanted to take Trinity in the future. Then the next year, the World of Darkness was rebooted as what is now called the Chronicles of Darkness. And Trinity got D20 releases.
Okay.
And... since it didn't work with the Storyteller system, maybe it'll work with the D20 system. Spoiler, it didn't. But the Chronicles of Darkness sort of encouraged me to sort of take my plans in a different direction and work on sort of a potential reboot of Trinity using the new storytelling system.
Okay.
And around 2005, I talked to Rich and said, can I do this? I had been warned by some friends in the industry not to bother because he'd just tell me no. But, for me, that just meant I have nothing to lose by asking. If he's going to tell me no anyway, then, I might as well ask and get it out of the way.
Exactly. Well, yeah, if people are telling you that's the worst thing that's going to happen, then it's like, well, I know the worst thing that's going to happen. Like, he's not going to show up and punch you in the face for asking,
Right. Well, he might now, but...
Yeah.
Back then, probably not.
That'd be a fun road trip, just driving up to Canada just to punch Ian in the face.
Yep. I'm on board.
With all that Kickstarter money.
Yep. Yeah, right.
Solid gold jet skis. So he actually told me yes at the time. And so I started building up my new crew, including people like John Snead, who is now the Aeon developer. Uh-huh. And we started doing some preliminary work on putting together what we wanted to do with our little Trinity Universe reboot. And I kept on sort of poking Rich, saying, okay, what's the next step? What do we do now? How do we move forward? And it wasn't until the end of 2006 that he got back to me saying, like, look, we've been merged with the CCP, so unfortunately the yes is going to have to turn into a no.
Oh.
Which is disappointing, but I sort of shelved that, and, you know, I always, like, just in the back of my head while I was doing other things, like, what would I do, you know, if everything had worked out? What directions would I take things? And that progressed until about 2011, when CCP had undergone its reorganization, decided they were no longer going to do any publishing. Rich sent me a private message on Twitter, said, like, hey, I think I can see direction where we can bring the Trinity games back. Do you want to resend your proposal? Yeah, okay.
The story's a roller coaster. It's just up and down, up and down.
Yeah.
Yes, no.
And by, I think, March in 2012, so just a few months later, he said, like, yeah, do you want to be involved? Yes, I do. Absolutely. And that's... So Rich had purchased the Trinity Universe from CCP, so it wasn't... Like, this is before Onyx Path was announced, but Onyx Path did own now what had formerly been White Wolf's property.
Right.
Unfortunately, the ball took a little longer to get rolling than I would have liked, but we just did the Kickstarter, and it did really well, and I'm really excited for people to finally see what I've been sort of working on for the last 15 years, and more directly for the last 5 or 6.
Yeah, it sounds like it's definitely like a passion project for you, as far as like how long you've been invested in it.
Like,
that's really amazing.
Yeah, it's always been one of my favorite game lines, and sort of Rich giving me the reins to it. It's like, you know, someone walking up to you and say, "Hey, do you want to be in charge of the new Star Wars movies?" Like,
right.
Yes, absolutely.
Yes, I do. That's awesome. No, it's always really, really, really cool when you can turn your, you know, passions and things that you love into a job, which absolutely. I mean, on some level, that's what I think everybody in the role playing game industry has done.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah. We're not in it for money.
Yeah, you don't really get into the gaming industry if you want to make money doing it, really.
I mean, you can make some money, like money.
Yeah, you can make a money. Yeah.
one money.
But not multiple monies.
How much you get paid on iPath? One money.
One money.
It's like Homer Simpson when he said,
yeah,
like,
I
have 3 kids and no money. I want no kids and 3 money.
3 money. Awesome. Well, yeah, so let's dig into that real quick before we get back to Onyx Path stuff then. What do you love about Trinity?
Well, when I first got into it in 1997, when it first released as Aeon for about 2 weeks before the name changed to Trinity, at the time, White Wolf was pretty much synonymous with the World of Darkness. There had been the brief Street Fighter RPG, but other than that, it was just World of Darkness. So to have this brand new RPG using the storyteller system, and it's a science fiction game, that was, like, I wouldn't say mind-blowing, but it piqued my interest, certainly.
Right.
Because it was a system I loved, and I've always been, like, a science fiction nerd. And delving into Trinity when I read it, it's just sort of every science fiction genre is just sort of crammed into the setting. So,
right.
Like, if you can wander the arcologies of the Federated States of America, if you want to do more of a cyberpunk game, if you want to do, like, Firefly or Battlestar Galactica, there are the Leviathan jump ships that are reconnecting with the lost colonies. It's like, you can do this from week to week. You can just completely flip genres. It's so good.
Yeah, no, when I was reading through the new one, I was like, you can see, like, a hint of Shadowrun and, like, a hint of more than a hint of superheroes.
Yeah.
But you can see little tastes of all these different kind of sci-fi settings, which is right. why it's so cool to me that it's a continuum. So mm-hmm. there's also different eras you can set all these different things in.
Right, absolutely.
Yeah, I don't know if you want to speak to that at all, as far as like Aberrant versus Aeon versus Adventure.
Yep,
or Adventure, as it is.
Yes, I was getting there. So the next game to come out was Aberrant, which was the near future superheroes game. And right. At the time, it was, well, it wasn't the first superheroes game, certainly.
No.
It was sort of one of the first that took it in more of a deconstructionist direction.
Mm-hmm.
And I've described it as sort of X-Men in the setting of Watchmen.
Okay.
And yeah, it was just a very different take on superheroes, and I really liked what they did with it. Then Adventure came along. Adventure!
Adventure!
Where it did pulp, and I love pulp. So it was just like the Trinity universe was basically, here's a big list of everything Ian likes, and just like shove it in my face. So like I fell in love with it. I couldn't not like it.
That's exciting. I mean, like, yeah, it definitely is really cool when, like, you know, find things that kind of nick you on all those levels.
Yeah.
You're like, oh, I like all of these things. It's very, very rare that a property comes along that kind of hits all your buttons.
Well, I wouldn't say all my buttons, but it certainly hits a lot of them.
I've actually been reading recently, it's a bit of a digression, but it's a retrospective of Doctor Who. But one of the things that was interesting in that is that the idea of rabbit holes. At a certain point in your life, you find that one property that after you experience it, your life changes forever. Mm-hmm. It sounds like in a lot of ways, Trinity was your rabbit hole of just like, you know, once you realize what a game could do, it's suddenly just, wow, this is awesome.
Right. Yeah. Like the World of Darkness was a big expansive thing, but like just Vampire, for example, was, you know, it was a setting about vampires.
Right.
Right.
And I loved it, but Trinity, like, oh, the equivalent in Trinity is like, okay, you know, vampires are going on here, but, you know, if you travel this way, then vampires become something else, and you can turn around and go in this other direction, and suddenly there's space battles. You know, it was just, like, so much was happening, and you could zoom in on one tiny little bit, or, like, just hop from place to place as part of a big expansive campaign. It's like fractal game design almost.
Yeah.
And what's interesting to me is that wasn't really touted as a huge benefit at the time. It was kind of just almost working underneath. People knew that these three games were connected, but even inside the games, there was so much depth and diversity. I don't think that was really kind of well known except for people who were really into the games.
Mm-hmm.
That's really interesting that wasn't like the main selling point, because it seems like it is now, you know, that's kind of like,
well, development on the original edition was really very rushed. Like, from original conception to when it published, it was only about 9 months.
Oh, wow.
So, like, while they did plug it in a lot of places that White Wolf Games weren't traditionally advertised, I think a lot of the focus of their advertising was almost last minute, probably. I'm guessing, but so, like, in retrospect, we can see, yes, it has all these neat features.
Right.
But at the time, they didn't really have the time to sort of come up with the good marketing strategy for that.
Right, it was so just, crap, we need a sci-fi game now.
Right.
I was going to say, so it was mostly plugged just as a sci-fi game, correct?
Yes.
It was just like, hey, cool sci-fi game.
Yep.
Yeah. That's awesome that we kind of, like, were able to dig into it then and, you know, market it a bit more correctly, hopefully, now.
I hope so, yeah.
With the reboot. So with the reboot, like, how is that team working? Because I know a lot of people, you know, we talk about our process fairly often on this podcast, and like, y'all's is a really interesting kind of workspace as far as how you're developing it.
Well, yeah, originally, like I said, it's been 5 or 6 years, and it's been a mm-hmm. long protracted road, and it was weird in that neither Johns neither myself are very mechanically minded. So we knew the basics of what we wanted the system to do, but we didn't have the expertise needed to actually create a new system. So there was a separate team that put the system together. And there were, I think, four major iterations of the system before we finally got what we're now calling the story path system.
Right.
So I was almost entirely unconnected with what they were doing.
Mm-hmm.
Just every now and then they'd bring something to us. Like, hey, what is this? Like, what do you think of this? Like, well, this is problematic for these seven reasons. Send it back. Do it again.
As a weird kind of serendipitous moment, Stu Wilson was actually one of the people on that design team.
Yes, he was. Yeah, for at least one of the part iterations. Of it.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, there were a few people at different stages that went in, went out.
Right.
Danielle Harper was one of the people. Well, she was working on Scion. I think she was part of the mechanics team, and she was working on Aeon, so she sort of became our story path guru and helped put that part of the book together for us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, she's fantastic at mechanics work in general. So.
She's amazing, yeah. Like, I am forever thankful to her for, like, actually, like, putting together what I had and putting it into, like, a cohesive product.
Yeah, I think everybody that is working on a story path game, which we've got, you know, four different lines right now that are using that. Yep. I think everybody should be thankful to Danielle.
Absolutely.
Well, it's just like,
yeah, because with, I mean, story path, it's such a great system because you can use it for all kinds of different settings and you can kind of tweak it depending on the setting. So mm-hmm. that's why we use it for Scion, we use it for Trinity, we use it for They Came From Beneath the Sea and Dystopia Rising. But right. it's slightly different iterations for everyone. Right. Like, there's slightly different powers, slightly different mechanics, but it's overall the same path system.
Right. And I like sort of the different flavor almost the same mechanic can have from game to game.
Yeah.
Like, the dramatic editing in the Trinity Continuum, it's sort of part of the setting where talents, you know, they can subconsciously manipulate probabilities. So, mm-hmm. like, they pick the timeline that works best for them, almost. But the same mechanic in They Came From Beneath the Sea, at least from what I've heard, it's couched more as script rewrites.
Yep.
Yes.
In fact,
which is a great idea.
In fact, because I wrote that section, actually. But one of the things that I pitched to Matthew, which he loved, was that we also had momentum. And momentum's much more of a kind of a, I think everyone in Trinity, but I think it's still kind of a little bit tied to the talent stuff, but everyone has access to momentum conceptually. Mm-hmm. And that's just the points you get for failing that you can then spend to do cool stuff later. And it's called the Black Pool in Trinity. I actually called it the Writer's Pool and changed the name of momentum to rewrites.
Nice.
So literally you have to negotiate with the rest of the players and convince the writing room to write you into better scenes.
That's excellent.
That's a lot of fun.
It is.
Yeah, you know, I can't wait to finally see that one as well. But yeah, so that's the mechanical side of things. So as far as the creative team, I know you've got different, like, you're the creative lead of Trinity.
Yes.
Correct? But then we have different, like, leads on every book, which is also not something that we always do. Like, sometimes with certain lines we'll have, like, a lead than other developers. But Trinity's kind of its own thing.
As of midwinter, Eddie gave a talk at our sort of our Onyx Path summit, and since then we've sort of been reexamining how we can do the development process and
mm-hmm.
what we can change and what we can keep the same, like just sort of ways to make it better. So we're trying a few different things.
We're trying to suck less.
Yes, trying to suck less. So for the Trinity Continuum. I and John Snead were more like traditional game line developers.
Mm-hmm.
But for example, for Aberrant, we've got three people in place of what would traditionally just be one developer.
Right.
Steve Kenson is our lead writer, I think we called him.
Lead designer.
Lead designer?
Yeah.
Okay. And then Eddie is our development producer, was that? And I am the creative lead. So we all take sort of different parts of the job of development and are mm-hmm. sort of spreading it out amongst the three of us, depending on what we're good at and what we actually want to do on the project.
Right. So what would you say, you know, the main thing that you're good at or that you're trying to do with it is?
Well,
like, what is your actual position?
As much as I hate to say it, like, a lot of people, like, I want to get into game design. I'm an ideas guy. Like, that is not a real job. In my case, that kind of is the job.
You're like the resident expert, too. I mean, you've been following this line for so long.
Yeah.
Like,
the official terminology is subject matter expert.
Yes.
There we go.
I am. I don't know everything. I do have to research a lot of stuff, but I have like a weirdly specific knowledge for a lot of details on a lot of the books. Mm-hmm. So I know more than most people on what the old setting was like and how I want the new setting to go and what sort of changes need to be made in order for that to happen. So I might not be implementing a lot of details on Aberrant. Like, there might be some stuff that I want, like, I want Aberrant to tackle these four things, but other than that, go wild. And I need Aberrant to end, or at least be on a trajectory, to lead it into the Aeon setting.
Right.
And I know that down the line when I do Adventure, I need it to lead into Aberrant. So I've got all this stuff juggling and trying to figure out how to make it all mesh into sort of a cohesive whole.
Do you know if is there a specific reason why we kind of start with Aeon and work backwards? I've never actually asked about that.
That's the way it went originally.
Mm-hmm.
Other than that, it just sort of made sense to repeat the same process this way. Like,
oh yeah, totally.
There's no real reason for it, as far as I know.
Okay.
Like, people who know some history might know that. Originally, when White Wolf was advertising a science fiction game, that game was going to be a game by Mark Reinhagen called Exile. But then Mark left the company, and so Aeon was created to put in its place.
Okay, I didn't know that.
Okay, so that's why the development of Aeon was so short, because, you know, there was a science fiction game that was going to be in that place, and suddenly it was gone. So they had to come up with something to fill that slot.
And right.
It was conceived at that time as a trilogy, mm-hmm. with Aberrant and then Adventure later. So I think like a good part of why it was in reverse order was just because they were advertising they were going to do a science fiction game, so it made sense to do a science fiction game first and then work backwards.
That makes sense. Yeah. So start with what you've already talked about, and then, you know, go from there.
Yeah.
So let's talk a little bit about your history with Onyx Path. I know a lot of people know you from the forums because you are one of our social media people, and folks probably see you posting on Twitter, on Reddit, all that stuff. So how did you get involved with Onyx Path as a company outside of Trinity?
Okay. Well, as you know, I had been brought in on early on as the Trinity developer before anyone knew what Onyx Path was.
Mm-hmm.
And a couple months after that, Rich had said, like, okay, Ian, we're doing this thing called Onyx Path and we need a website. Can you do that sort of thing? Mm-hmm. I said, yes, I can run a website for you. And also you're going to need someone to handle social media. And I could do that for you, too. And that's pretty much where that got started. And I think it was, like, I didn't really have an official title up until the Exalted Kickstarter when Rich mentioned that I was the community manager. So I said, yeah, all right, that sounds good. I'm the community manager.
You're like acquiring titles. I mean, that's really the best way to get a job, is just to have somebody come to you and say, hey, can you do the thing? You go, yeah.
Yep.
Sure.
Sure.
On it. So you've been with the company pretty much since its inception then.
Just about. Rich technically incorporated the company in the last couple of days of 2011. Mm-hmm. And by March the next year, I was already on board.
That's really awesome. I mean, it's nice that, you know, you get the kind of retention too. Like, you're still around. You're still posting. We're still
throwing
blog posts
at you. And I have a bit of job security too, because if I suddenly dropped out, I don't think there are a lot of people that would be able to pick up what I do all the time.
Mm-hmm. Definitely not a bad way to have security. Like, no one else can do my job, so I'm just going to keep doing my job.
Yep.
I'm into it.
There's certainly a fair number of conversations I can recall which are some form of, Ian, can we do this? And you saying yes, and here's how, or no, it's a terrible idea.
Yeah.
We're like, oh, and then we forget about it. And the player's like, hey, can we do this? We talked about this. I told you.
And I mean, you know, being the person to have veto power over certain things is also not the worst thing.
That's true.
No,
also true.
Not doing that. Don't want to.
Terrible.
So what are you really excited about in this new version of Trinity? Like, what is the kind of thing that you are the most interested in changing or doing?
Well, I mean, there's some stuff I'm not going to talk about yet because it's pretty early. Like, I don't want to spoil what we're doing with Aberrant. But in sort of a larger scope, originally there were just the three eras. There was Aeon, Aberrant, and Adventure. We've already got a fourth era with the core rulebook, which is our modern-day action-adventure setting.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to be doing more additional eras. Aeon, Aberrant, and Adventure are always going to be sort of the big three tent poles, but I love that we have the opportunity to explore just sort of a lot of holes in the timeline that were there originally.
Mm-hmm. That's awesome. Are there any particular places in the timeline you're interested in exploring? Whether we're doing it or not, we're not promising anything. Just what are you interested in?
Well, the one that sprung almost fully formed, it was like the first part of the like the first thing that I could define as like a new game rather than just like, hey, you know, I'd like to do the Victorian era. You know, that's just sort of an idle idea. But the first like actual sort of quote unquote game was the one we've been calling Aegis, which is set just after the Aberrant War, but before the Aeon setting starts, which it's 2084. It involves memory tech implants and explores sort of questions of identity. If you like Dontnod's early game Remember Me, or you like Total Recall, or you like the Animus parts of the Assassin's Creed games, this is right up that alley.
That was definitely where my brain went first with Assassin's Creed. I was like, that sounds cool.
Yeah, like it is, like if you're thinking of Assassin's Creed, this is a perfect excuse if you want to do like a time hopping game. Just set your game in the Anima period and then have people explore their genetic memory of the previous eras, right?
Yeah, I want to do that. And also you could do the Victorian thing that way.
Yeah.
Because I'm a sucker for the Victorian Assassin's Creed.
Syndicate. Excellent.
Yeah. Which one? I don't remember. I'm really bad at names. Okay, sure. Eevee, that one. I don't know why I'm so bad at names. First I'm mixing up mage games, now I'm mixing up Assassin's Creed games. I'm just not on all the time on this podcast.
They got a certain job to keep track of that stuff.
It would be easier if, like, they kept numbering them and the numbering was consistent.
Well, yeah.
Yes, it's true.
Because there were, like, three games with Ezio Auditore.
Yes.
And then they did Assassin's Creed 3. It's like...
That doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, it's hard to keep track of. I understand.
I also didn't play the first few, so for all I know, I'm coming on like Assassin's Creed like 12. I have no idea.
It'd
be like
it's
if I started
that,
playing
honestly.
Final Fantasy.
Well, honestly, yeah. I think it's part of the reason why they actually dropped the numbering was because we didn't want people to go, oh, this is Assassin's Creed 75. I can't possibly catch up, so I'm not going to bother. You know, they want each one to feel approachable.
People still play Final Fantasy.
Final Fantasy has one weird cachet. I mean, it gets away with a lot of stuff that most franchises can't.
True. So I do have, I'm sure we'll get to some more conversation in a minute, but I do have a few questions from some fans on the forums.
Sure.
That we talked about. I'm just trying to pull them up right now. So Lord Heru on the forums, or Heru, asked how much modern current history is going to be in Aberrant, since that one is kind of... You know.
Well, Aberrant builds off the Trinity Continuum core, which is set in the present.
Mm-hmm.
So, in as much as the Trinity Continuum core reflects the present, where, you know, in some cases it does, and in some cases it's our own invented history, Aberrant builds on that. So, it'll still sort of be recognizable as our world, but, you know, with our own differences.
Right. So are you going to be putting like some of the current events, things that are in the news today, or are you going to try to keep it a little bit more vague than that?
You know, we could go either way. It's still early in the writing process. Like the original one, it had this big timeline of events with President Schroer after I think it was, would that be after Clinton? I think so.
Yeah, I think it's right.
Mm-hmm. President Schroer, and then he was deposed because of a sex scandal, and then they elected President Pendleton, and then they elected there was an adventure where you could get Randall Portman, the first Nova, elected.
Okay.
So, you know, it had its own alternate history starting from about the point where it diverged, like the timeline diverged from the present, right?
Right.
Because the game was published in 1999 and the first eruptions started happening in the game in about 1998. So, in our case, end day, when Novas first start appearing, is this year. So,
okay.
So, it'll be more or less accurate up till 2018. With our own, you know, the differences of the Trinity Continuum, and then it'll start diverging, obviously, as we go into the future.
I'm going to say you can't just predict what's going to happen in the next 10 years and put it in the book?
Well, the original Aberrants did have a, following Pope John Paul II, they did have a Pope Benedict, and okay. that proved to be accurate.
Wow.
So maybe. You never know. We'll do our best.
I'm going to say, maybe you do have, like, a cool... you know, Oracle type thing going on with this book.
That would be fair, awesome. Aberrant also predicted Ric Flair would still be wrestling by 2008, and that did not turn out to be true.
That is also accurate, yes.
Does that make you sad, Eddie?
No, he needed to retire.
Oh, okay.
Woo!
Woo!
Oh, no. So, Kel Bureaus on the forums, and if I'm saying anybody's forum name wrong, I'm sorry, ask if we're going to publish some more antagonist or villain factions for the Trinity Corps. They said there are a lot of really cool allegiances, but they would like some more opposition stuff. Is that something that we're doing with any of the expansion materials, you think, or is that planned at all?
A lot of the allegiances, while they are framed as sort of, you know, heroic, because, you know, we want people to play heroes, right. They could just as easily be taken as antagonists. The one whose name escapes me right now, which is terrible, because, all right, there's one that's sort of about the, like, biological advancement, you know, hooray, yay, we're doing experiments on people for...
Was that the Bear Day whatever something?
No.
I read both of the books in, like, a two-week period, so...
Yeah. I'm going to quickly look that up while I'm talking. Anyway, if you're looking at them as sort of a protagonist faction, that could be, like, the equivalent of Project Rebirth, which is the thing that made Captain America into a super soldier, right?
Right.
Mm-hmm.
But it could just as easily be, if you've seen Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., it could just as easily be the Project Centipede.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that makes sense.
So, like, it can go either way. A lot of these organizations can go both ways. The,
you
can global...
kind of frame them whatever right. you want, depending on what your characters would do or what your characters' convictions are.
Right. The Transcendent Alliance, that's the one I was thinking of. Okay.
Oh, okay.
And then you have the... For example, I mean... Mm-hmm. You could play that as the organization that funds Lara Croft or Nathan Drake, but could just as easily be the Trinity, who, you know, yeah, I hate the fact that the antagonists of the Tomb Raider games are the Trinity, but it could take that role. And one of the founders of the Global Cartography Initiative, if people are fans of adventure, is one of the Poniatowskis, and the Poniatowski Foundation in Adventure were explicitly antagonists.
Right.
So a lot of these can sort of take on both roles. You could even play a game where, using the Transcendent Alliance again, you are one of the good guys trying to expose, you know, some people who are doing some pretty shady stuff within the organization.
Mm-hmm. No, that makes perfect sense. Also, every time that you, like, connect Trinity to a game I really like a video game, I'm like, I want to play that in Trinity, because now I want to play Tomb Raider.
Yeah, we were doing that all throughout production. It was great. And also during the Kickstarter, I kept on mentioning, hey, has anyone seen the show? This is like inspired by this. This is inspired by this. And James kept on going, I want to play all of this.
Yeah. Yeah, James Bell, our Kickstarter coordinator, he gets very excited about like everything we do. I think it's part of why he's so good at his job.
It's fantastic.
It's because like all through the Exalted Kickstarter that we just had that I was working on very closely, just every time something came up, he's like, yeah, I want that in the book. Yeah, let's do that. And I'm just like, James.
Like when I was putting together the Pharaoh's Lightkeepers.
Mm-hmm.
What I had in mind when I was putting that together was Charlie's Angels.
Okay.
But it was pointed out to me that you could also do Person of Interest with it.
Mm-hmm.
Or you could do, what's the name of that thing with Miranda Zero? Global Frequency.
Okay.
There's like a lot of different things which sort of, you know, fill that niche that the organization can represent. So any one of those things that you're a fan of, suddenly you've got a game, right?
Yeah, no, totally. Yeah. And that's I think part of why I like Trinity is because it's enough of a toolbox system, mm-hmm. that you could take almost any kind of story you'd like to tell and play it in Trinity on some level.
Right.
Which is really cool, especially with the one you were talking about for ages. Mm-hmm. It's like, oh, you want to play a samurai game? Cool. You can play that in Trinity if you really want to, you know?
Yeah.
You have a lot of fun with it. That's awesome.
Well, I hope people do. That's the point, right?
Yeah, I mean, yes, we do make games. They are for having fun. I just meant, like, you can go more, a little more wild with it than I think I even initially thought when I was reading it. Like, yeah. there were things that were kind of setting adjacent that I was like, oh, I could play this, you know, it would be kind of like a superhero type game, or kind of a this type game. But, like, I wasn't thinking quite as expansively as obviously y'all are. And that's expansively with an AE, because...
Yes,
of course, everything is an AE. Okay.
Yeah.
The fact that I had to program the character on my keyboard now. Combined AE, it's just like, ah, I better just do this now.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, I'm very used to that that code to be able to put that in at this point.
Alt-146 for the capital, Alt-145 for lowercase.
Yep. Luckily, I did use it in World of Warcraft back in the day, so I actually had to type it a lot.
Oh, there you
right.
go.
So, like, that one and the accented E, I can do without thinking.
Like, Mike really hates it for production reasons when someone writes something with a lot of, like, non-standard characters, because not a lot of fonts support them. So, like, I'm really sorry, Mike. We've got a lot of, you know, we've got the AE ligature, we've got the Norsa with the little sidola on the C there. We've got stuff with the accents on the E. Like, I'm really sorry, but that's part of the setting.
Well, actually, I remember I had that chat with him earlier this year, because I was like, hey, Mike, just so you know, Trinity and Scion both have lots of specialized characters, so we should probably think about new font choices, these new guidelines.
I was going to say, Ian, you should not feel bad if you've seen Scion.
Yeah, Scion's got nothing on anybody.
No,
the
I know.
Orisha chapter.
Well, I can only apologize for what's under my purview.
That's fair.
I'm not going to apologize for Scion.
I'll apologize for Scion.
Okay.
Because, like, even when I was editing that, I had to consistently go through and make sure that every instance of, you know, a certain god's name had all the correct accents on it. And I was like, I don't even know what's happening. There's always, like, one that someone misses.
And some of those, like, just depending on the language, like, some of those can get pretty intense.
Oh, yeah. The South American ones were real fun.
Oh, yeah.
They're, like, 83 letters long and have a million accents.
Yeah.
Very exciting.
Like, whoever was doing the language is like, what accent haven't I used lately? Let's add three of those.
Yeah. Yeah. Totally. So, get back to a couple of these questions. Or we can talk about fonts for the next half hour. I'm cool with that. I'm into fonts.
Whatever.
Fonts are cool. I read a whole article about fonts the other day because I find them interesting. And then I'm like, this is why I'm a dork.
Welcome to the Honest Fontcast.
I'm all for it.
Meredith Gerber is squeeing right now.
Yeah, if we ever do Onyx Fontcast, we should just have Meredith on.
I actually have a terrible and infrequently updated blog called Gamer Sons, where I post the logo of a game, but I write it all in Comic Sans.
Oh no.
Yeah.
Why do you do that?
Well, it's Brian Glass's fault.
It is Brian Glass's fault.
Okay.
And also, I like sort of seeing, when you strip away the font itself, I like sort of seeing what the presentation of the font, like, how effective that is in sort of, like, when you think of, I don't know, let's, you know, use Vampire the Masquerade as the example. When you think of the Vampire the Masquerade logo, right, if you stripped away the specific fonts that it uses, how effective is what's left at still being Vampire the Masquerade to you?
Huh. Yeah, no, I mean, that is actually very useful, and that's why marketing and branding are so interesting in general, is because, you know, you can really screw up a logo or a presentation with just a very tiny change.
Right.
One thing that was really funny early on with Pugmire is that Ian redid the Pugmire logo with the word vampire.
Yes.
Right.
But it was a similar thing, where it's like, first it was like, vampire, Pugmire. But it was very interesting that the presentation of the Pugmire logo still kind of shone through, and even though the word had changed to vampire, you still kind of half seeing Pugmire in that space. It doesn't look anything like the Vampire the Masquerade logo, and has a very different approach and a very different aesthetic that just doesn't feel the same at all. So it's a similar idea.
I think I also gave Yosha a couple of fangs.
You did, yes.
Yes.
Tiny little white triangles.
Okay, I'm looking this up after we get off this recording, because I really want to see all of this.
It is pretty adorable.
So speaking of design, actually, though, Adam Rice from the forums wants to hear about some of the design philosophy that's going into Aberrant. They say that a lot of what made the original version so memorable to them was a more realistic take on people with powers, from like a social standpoint, and a what happens when someone with, and in quotes, a what happens with some when someone with no defense is punched by the Hulk standpoint. So how are you doing powers in the new version? Not just mechanically, but like what kind of setting are you trying to evoke with it? What kind of design is going into it?
Well, when the original game was published in 99, we really couldn't, I say we, but I mean the original design team, obviously, because I wasn't there. They really couldn't predict the effect that social media would have, because it wasn't a thing, right?
Right.
So what they had was the N television network, and a lot of the pages of the book were marked up as either like sort of clips from TV series, or like the N website. So stuff like that. So a lot of sort of the celebrity culture surrounding Novas was sort of presented from that context, but things would be very different now, and that's more of the angle that we're planning on taking as we're developing it. So, you know, people like getting camera phone clips of fights between Novas on YouTube and talking about it on Twitter and Facebook, that sort of thing.
Yeah, so. which is something that a lot of our game lines have had to update to include. Like, I mean, that was a concern when the Scion team was working too. Was just going like, okay, well, if there are actually children of gods running around calling down lightning, we should probably account for the fact that someone's going to take a picture of that.
Right.
Like, someone somewhere will have a camera.
In concept, it's the same idea, but in presentation, it's going to be very different.
Yes, so somebody else on the forums, I'm sorry, I'm trying to find it, asked about the media presence in Aberrant. They said that the media in Aberrant first edition was a presence in and of itself with its own dedicated Nova staff. Is that going to be kind of its own faction in second edition, or is that going to continue to be a thing? That's from Dark Soul Eternium.
I would not say it would be a faction, no. Okay. Not like the other allegiances, but it will continue to be a notable presence. Like, Aberrant wouldn't be Aberrant, I don't think, without that sort of emphasis, so that's going to continue to persist.
Yeah, no, I've looked through the first publication of Trinity, and it was super interesting, just the way the book is presented, even, as far as layout and clips and media and stuff. It's definitely very different from a lot of our other books.
Yeah,
like, that's a book that when you pick it up, you don't think, like, oh, White Wolf, you know? Right.
Yeah.
So, somebody, Ian Turner, says that the diversity is more of a thing than it was back in the winning days of the last century, as far as at least how we approach it and think about it. So are there going to be more prominent Novas of color in this one? Are we doing more, like, you know, prominent Black and Asian characters, etc.?
Absolutely. Like, I don't know if people have seen the artwork that was presented for the Trinity Continuum and Aeon Kickstarters, but we had a wide variety of different people presented. Lots of men and women, lots of people of different races, so, like, I see no reason not to continue doing that with Aberrant.
That's awesome. I mean, that's been a big push, I think, across the industry, and definitely even in our company, is to try to make sure that everything is, you know, always better than it was.
I will also say, since I was on the production side of things, I also did try to hire diversely, and I ran names by Ian and Steve. We all are on the same page of trying to hire diversely for the writers on the project. So when we have people writing about areas like Central America, South America, and so forth, you're trying to get people who are either from those areas or very familiar with those areas to talk about them from a position of authority and a position of knowledge. So that's really, really helpful, I think, and it gives a different tenor and tone to the product.
Yeah, I think it's really important. Like I said, I mean, if you're working on, you know, places and books that are not where we're from, it is really, really nice to have writers that actually know those places. Whether it's research, whether they've lived there, or whether that's where they're from culturally, I think it's nice to have that kind of eye on it,
right.
which is something that, you know, I think is important.
Yeah, like I'm a straight cis white guy. People have heard enough of my kind of voice, so I want to make sure we have a lot of other voices in here too. We may not hit everyone that we want to, but, you know, we'll hit more than just me. I want everyone to be able to see themselves in this world.
Yeah, that's, I think in role-playing games in general, that's important, is being able to put yourself in there, because obviously that's what you're doing. So even if you're making a character that's the exact opposite of you, it's still nice to kind of be able to go, like, where would I fit in? Like, how would I play this? Because, I mean, every time you make a character, they usually have something of yourself in them. It is rare to me that I make a character for a game that is exactly the opposite of me, because how would I know how that person would respond to everything? Yeah, very cool. So I'm going to ask one more forum question, which is from Star Killer, and this is a kind of an easy one, which is, will there be an equipment section in the core book to outfit a Nova without obvious powers?
I don't know if we'll do a full equipment section in the core rulebook, like we did with Aeon, where a lot of the technology manual stuff ended up in the Aeon expansion. We might do the same thing this time. But originally in Aberrant, you could not be an Iron Man style superhero. That is no longer the case. I don't know in which book the details will be found, but you will absolutely be able to make Iron Man in the new edition.
So you can actually play a superhero with, like, zero powers, just money and smarts?
Well, depending on how you want to quantify that, like, is Tony Stark a Nova and he's powering his suit with quantum abilities, but otherwise has no powers? Or is Tony Stark just, like, effectively a talent? Those will both be, like, treated in different ways.
Like, right.
If he has no powers, just, like, flat out, he's just a talent, that sort of thing can already basically be handled with the core rulebook without even factoring Aberrant in.
Right. Very cool.
But if Tony Stark is a mega intelligent Nova and he is powering his suit with his quantum powers, that's what the suit runs off of, that's something else entirely, and that should be available to do with the Aberrant rules.
I feel like the tagline for Trinity should just be, like, Trinity, here are all of your options.
Trinity, like, we got that.
Yeah. Adventure. No, really. Any adventure. Or you could play adventure. That works.
Yes. The adventure.
Adventure.
So before we, like, wrap up here in a few minutes, just because you are a fan of so many things, what other games, either by us or by other people, are you playing? Are you interested in? Have you loved for a while? What else do you like?
My other big sort of, I wouldn't say romance exactly, but the game I love more than anything else is Planescape from AD&D 2nd Edition.
Yes, you
okay.
do.
And it was huge in scope because it covered the entire D&D multiverse. And it predominantly took place in the Outer Planes, the Realms of the Gods. And it was, like, every almost like almost every expectation you have from D&D is turned on its head in Planescape.
Okay.
And it was, it involved a lot of philosophical factions, which were almost sort of a springboard for me for White Wolf Games, because that's specifically why they included factions in Planescape, was like, hey, these White Wolf things are getting popular, we should bring some of that into our games, and they did mm-hmm. the factions in Planescape. So, like, if Wizards of the Coast came to me and said, hey, we want you to develop Planescape, I would have a very difficult decision on my hands.
You'd be like, which one of my babies do I take?
Yeah, like
very Sophie's choice.
I keep on hearing rumors that it's coming back in some form, and I got really excited last year. It turned out it was just an enhanced edition of the Planescape Torment PC game, which mm-hmm. was still amazing. But I keep on waiting for more feedback on whether or not Planescape is actually making a real return, because that, like, I whatever Planescape releases, I'm there for it.
Right. And I mean, speaking of PC games, just to ask you, I know you do some work on the vampire game Bloodlines still.
Some.
Yes.
Well, that's really interesting to me, because there aren't that many games that are that, you know, kind of older that people are still releasing things for.
Yeah, it's just passed its 13th birthday this last November.
Oh, it's a teenager.
Yeah. And the it was released in sort of an unfinished state, and the fans picked up the slack, and they've been continually updating it since then, not just with mods, but with patches. And the most popular one, the unofficial patch, fairly straightforward name. It has sort of two versions, the basic version, which is just bug fixes, and the plus version, which also includes a lot of restored content that the developers didn't get a chance to finish, or mm-hmm. maybe it was just like concept designs, just like little bits of the code are being ferreted out and sort of finalized, and in some cases just a few you know, quality of life improvements that were never in the original code, like, say, widescreen was never considered in the original, but now widescreen is available. Just lots of stuff to make Bloodlines the game that it really should have been when it first released. And over the years, I have contributed a few things to the plus version of the patch.
So what kind of things have you changed or fixed or upgraded on it?
Well, anytime you go from one map to another, there's sort of a loading screen with a bit of lore or a bit of, you know, mechanic guidelines, whatever.
Right.
One of the restored quests was a quest line involving a La Sombra hiding in the library. And I noticed that a lot of the other, like, when you go from area to area, some clans are more prominent than others. And I noticed that there was no sort of tooltip text for the La Sombra. And if they're going to be featured in this quest, they should have some. So I wrote something up. That was my first contribution.
Mm-hmm.
Then later, when I was playing, I noticed that the hub map for the Santa Monica area, which you can find on the bus stops, it had the ocean on the right-hand side of the map, even though it's supposed to be on the west coast. And it bugs me that the map was upside down. So
that would annoy me too.
I rebuilt the map right side up, and I also added a couple of little alleyways and added a couple of locations that weren't already listed on the map. And then I thought, you know what? Let's just bring the rest of the maps of the game up to the same level of quality, where I include as many locations as I can. I include all the little alleyways. So I did all the maps in the game, and then I did all the sewers. And so I ended up doing like 8 new maps for the game or whatever it was. And then more recently, for like I think it started with 9.8 or 9.9. The version 10 of the patch just came out earlier this month, so this is fairly recently.
Okay.
If you're playing the plus patch, on the main menu, sort of clan symbols drift around in the background.
Mm-hmm.
Except they look like crap because the images that they're sourced from are like little 16 pixel by 16 pixel images blown up to cover 1/8 of your screen.
Whoops.
Yeah, that's not good.
So I tried to figure out exactly like what the limit was, because if you just throw in like a 500 by 500 image, your game is going to crash.
Right.
So I figured out the limit was 128 by 128, I think it was, which is the maximum allowable size for those little flying images. I redid all the clan symbols at that resolution, and then since we have symbols for the Quajin, we have symbols for the Giovanni, both of those factor into the game, I added symbols for them too. And then I tweaked the clan symbols on the character sheets. They all had the same gradient. I gave them different gradients, which matched the covers of the clan books.
I just love it when somebody gets so like involved in the minutia of like a passion project like this. Because I mean, no one's paying you to do this, right? Like you're just
no,
doing
absolutely
it.
No, not. It's
just doing
like,
it for fun.
I saw a way that I could make this game better, and that's the whole point of the patch. So why not do the thing?
That's like, just so funny to me.
If I can figure out how to do it, why not do it?
Yeah. Like I said, it's just like it's interesting to me because like I edit books for a living, but mm-hmm. I don't like pick up e-published books on Kindle and edit them for fun, you know? Which
well,
is
true.
Kind of what you're doing.
Well, I mean, theoretically those e-published books, you know, they have their own editors or, you know,
that is not always the case. Yeah, that's very theoretical. That's
allegedly.
And you know, once it's published, but this is a game where patches are continually, like, there is a process where changes are continually being made to the game to improve it. So if I can insert myself into that existing process, cool.
True. And I guess on some level I do that. I work at a makeup store very, very part-time, just as like a fun job. And a while back, I actually tracked down the email for a French perfume company to tell them that they had a typo on their box.
There you see.
And it took me like 4 steps to even find their email. I emailed them and I was like, just so you know, the box art for this, it's a pretty significant typo on the side. I just thought you should know. And I'm just sitting there like, why am I doing this? Why am I don't know.
You understand.
I do. I notice mistakes like that. I usually don't take steps to correct them if I'm not being paid. And I'm still a little salty that they didn't send me even like a $10 coupon.
Right.
But, you know, whatever. Awesome. Well, is there anything else you want to talk about before we wrap this up? I think we're hitting close to time.
Yeah, we are close to time.
Oh, yeah, I think we more or less covered all like all the major current projects I've got going on.
All things Ian.
Yep.
All things Ian are Trinity, Bloodlines, and Planescape. That's it. That's the ingredients that go into
me,
an Ian.
Really. Yep.
Every time I see your name, by the way, because you do the whole Ian A.A. Watson, I just imagine that it stands for like Aberrant Aeon, or that both of your middle names have the AE symbol going on.
It doesn't, but I should think about changing that.
Yeah, you should just go legally change your name.
I do that because...
Ian Aeon Adventure Watson.
Yes. I do that because there's a science fiction author named Ian Watson who has written books for Warhammer.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay.
So since there's an existing Ian Watson in the industry, I just throw my middle initials in there just to, you know, distinguish myself.
Yeah, no, that makes perfect sense. Like I said, it's just every time I see it, that's what I think of now. Because we've had all the different, you know, conversations about the Aeon expansion, how we're going to spell it, and all the A names and what have you.
So all these questions I have about you writing Space Hulk, I should just throw out.
Yes.
Maybe you should add an A to your name every time a new expansion comes out.
Maybe.
Yeah.
I should write a book on how to run Warhammer with the Aeon rules.
There you go. We are coming up with so many great ideas. You are an ideas guy. See, this really is your job. Awesome. Well, if people wanted to find you on the internet and you were willing to let them do so, where would they do that?
For the most part, I can be found on Twitter with my handle Von Aether, which is VonAether. That's two different letters. AE. It's not the ligature. And on Facebook, I recently set up a page for myself as a professional, which is one word, IanAAWatson.creative.
Ian, it's been great talking to you.
Well, thank you. It's
I hope everybody enjoys all the Trinity questions. I know it's got a huge fan base that I just didn't expect when we did the Kickstarter. Like, I had so many friends coming out of the woodwork going like, you're doing a new Trinity? What? I'm so excited. And I'm like, I had never heard of this game until I started working with Onyx Path. Where did you all come from?
Well,
and why
fantastic.
Didn't you tell me about it sooner?
Yeah.
Well, awesome. It's been great talking to you.
Thank you.
Thanks so much, Ian.
Thanks. And we're back with Eddie and Matthew after the interview. You've had a chance to listen to that now, Matthew. What'd you think?
Yes, like some Lynch closet dwelling voyeur, I've been listening to the interview.
You were so put upon.
Yeah, you know, you just keep me back here, gagged, unable to ask any questions. Didn't even ask my emergency question this time. Very, very disappointed. No, I have listened to it, and honestly, I think the thing that I forgot about Ian, and I know it's slightly off topic to our games, is his love of Planescape, which is a love I share.
Yes.
It is, without doubt, the D&D aficionado's setting, because it just has so much from art to setting to flavor text. It is, and mechanics too. The Outer Planes books for it are wonderful. So I hope one day there's a chance for both Ian and myself to work on that in some form or other. But yeah, being able to hear him enthuse about Trinity, I found out an awful lot. I had no idea that it was the replacement product for Exile. And I had no idea about the very short schedule that the original Trinity had to abide by before release. So it's...
Yeah, I can't imagine like starting a new line now and having like 6 months.
yeah, I think that would be a little hellish.
To be fair, I didn't have to start a line, but that was the time frame for V20, actually, was about 6 months. And it was primarily me writing it, so I do sympathize with trying to put a massive book out in a very short timetable.
Well, one thing we right. should emphasize, of course, is, and I don't believe it came up in the interview, so I'm going to make a big song and dance about it now, is, of course, while the Kickstarter for the game has concluded as of time of release of this podcast, you are still able to back it on BackerKit. We will post a link in the video description, in the podcast description. So you shut your mouth.
You've been doing YouTube for far too long.
You know? Yeah, the YouTube instincts are kicking in, I can tell.
Yeah, and don't forget to like, subscribe, and so on. That's only half exaggeration. Please, if you're listening to this, wherever you are in the world, please, if you can hear my voice, please rate this on whatever site you find it. Please subscribe to us on whatever site you find us. It may sound desperate, it may sound imploring, but the best way to get more content out of us is to subscribe. It means...
Yeah, we are on iTunes, Google Play, pretty much every podcatcher app has a way to find us. We're hosted on Podbean, so it goes through all that.
And we will be making our way to YouTube as well.
Yes.
So that will
hopefully by the time you hear this, we should be on YouTube. But if not, it'll be soon.
Exactly.
Yeah. Add us to your playlist of choice.
Yeah, along with my videos, probably.
And also the Gentleman Gamer on YouTube, I guess.
In that case, that's a wonderful place to wrap up. If you want to find me, if you want to find me on social media, my Twitter handle is clackclickbang, a little like cocking and firing a gun, I guess. And my ID on YouTube and on the Onyx Path forums is the Gentleman Gamer. Otherwise, my name is Matthew Dawkins.
Eddie?
And you can find me at most any social media sites at Eddie Fate, EddyFate, or you can check me out on my website, eddiefate.com.
And you can find me on social media pretty much anywhere as Dixie Cyanide. That's my Dixie like my first name, Cyanide like the poison. Thank you very much. This has been the Onyx Pathcast. Many worlds, one podcast.
Bunch of weirdos. Porgmire.
please, can we write Porgmire?
No.
Please.
Hey, if you want to be sued by Disney, feel free, but I do not.
Well, that's why you get a license.
For Disney? Right.
Yeah. For Porgmire.
I don't have several zillion dollars lying around.
What? why not? You're a role-playing industry guy. Isn't that what they all think we have?
The world needs to know.
Yeah, can we just have that as our cold open? Just Quagmire.
Welcome to the Onyx Podcast.
Welcome to the Onyx Podcast.